With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabona podcast. I'm back again with Michael De Silva and Ryan Hun, and we're going to discuss this week's action, and we're going to start with Manchester United's win at Wembley over Tottenham Hotspur in the Premier League.
Someone's chipper.
No, I just think it's good for the Premier League. I think it's good for the Premier League to have Manchester United.
Good for your Premier League.
Okay, that's true. Michael, what do you think?
I'm not happy, but I was struck actually by some comments from David De Gea after the game. He was talking about Solskjaer, and he just said, he's brought happiness, and it just spoke volumes because it's the same players,
right?
Same players. It's just the importance of the atmosphere, the environment, and that shouldn't be understated, you know?
Right. Feels like a distant fever dream, to be honest. Mm. It feels like, you know, when you have like a really bad migraine and after you recover from the migraine, you can't remember how bad the pain was. You know that when you have like extreme pain or fever or flu, like, and quite recently, it's amazing how quickly you forget the period of discomfort. True. And I think at United now, you look at them, it's just, that is how a team in the top six should be performing. And they weren't perfect against Spurs. Spurs are very good. Mm. It's just that is how a top six side should be turning out week after week.
From United for so long, you've been getting less than the sum of the parts. And I think now you're just basically getting the sum of the parts. You know,
exactly.
Like, I don't think you're getting any more than that. Mm. There's obviously still a lot of room for improvement, but I don't think anyone's really expecting that from Solskjaer. That's not his job. It's just to kind of just rebalance a little bit. I mean, Spurs could have easily won that game.
Right.
And one thing we were chatting about before we came on was that I think it's key not to draw massive conclusions from that game, because I don't think there are any. I don't think that means that Spurs are done, and I don't think United are going to come second or whatever. I mean, I think that it's, you know, it's made things a lot more interesting. We've got a top six again.
It's tightened up,
hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Good weekend for Chelsea too.
Yeah.
Early season De Gea or World Cup De Gea might have conceded a couple of those goals. Really? No, if we're being real, like, De Gea's form has improved. He was otherworldly last year, and he hasn't been otherworldly. He's been merely good this season with a couple of mistakes. And he's just locked in a way. I mean, like, the footwork you need to get down to some of those shots, which looked easy in the end, was pretty outstanding.
And there's a straight comparison with the goal that Lloris wasn't able to arrange his feet.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And he wasn't, you know, Trippier was at fault really for that goal. But, you know, De Gea seems to be returning to those elite levels, whereas Lloris, I think his best days might be behind.
What Lloris looked like when he let the goal in, Lloris looked like, you know, when you see those tennis players that get beaten by a forehand pass and the ball bounces like 3 feet from their ankle, and you're like, it looks worse than it is, but because they didn't get the first movement right.
Yeah.
And you see Rashford shaping up, and you're thinking to yourself pretty much, he's going to go across the keeper. Like, it seemed pretty clear the angle he was on. And, you know, these are the small margins. And we maybe criticised Lloris too much because he made a great save from Pogba second half, actually.
That is true, yeah.
But it's just these small margins, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's also it's just the consistency as well.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what goalkeepers have to be judged on ultimately. But yeah, I mean, Rashford showed incredible pace, like a real explosion of pace to get away from Vertonghen, who's not quite as slow as some people think he is. He can
deceptively quick.
Yeah, maybe.
Rashford's going to make anybody look slow if you get caught turning
exactly
to chase him. Yeah. Anybody.
And that was it. Yeah. And yeah, the finish was just laser precision. Like really, really fantastic. And I think Rashford, I think this is a huge season for him because Mourinho put his trust in him for a while. Then that trust broke down. Mm. And I think Rashford needs a coach that is going to love him.
Right.
He needs that arm around him. He strikes me as that type of player.
I think he's interesting because you see how Solskjaer has used him in the short period of time. He's used him in a wide position, but also used him centrally. And I've compared Rashford before to Thomas Müller. But Ryan feels, I think we've discussed before, that I was maybe shortchanging him in terms of his skill set because...
No, you know, not that. I just think, I mean, I can understand maybe. I just don't see them as similar players in terms of skill sets at all. You know, I think that Thomas Müller is, he's very, very kind of wily, sneaky, kind of drops into those little pockets where people just wouldn't expect him to be. But without huge kind of bursts of pace or movement, he's very like a, you know, kind of not wanting to bring up a basketball analogy, but he's like an aging point guard, you know what I mean? Mm. He kind of just seems to be there. Whereas I think Rashford is a lot more dynamic, actually.
But Musa, what's the comparison that you see?
I would suppose it's really the ability to play all across the forward line, to play like wide left, wide right. Mm-hmm. You know, he wasn't the best as an out-and-out nine, Müller, but he could play it. And to play just behind. Mm-hmm. And Rashford has this just unbelievable versatility. And actually, I think Martial has it too. But one thing that I will say that was really fascinating that Solskjaer threw in was in the relation to Jesse Lingard's role, who played in a sort of false nine against Arsenal. And he said, actually, look, you know, Lingard's more of a link player. And that's why I play him as a false nine, so the players can run off him like Martial and Rashford. And it made me think perhaps we don't give Jesse Lingard, I mean football generally doesn't give Lingard enough credit for his footballing intelligence, his ability to connect in a style, I suppose, more like a kind of Pedro player, where Pedro is someone who goes under the radar a little in Spain's successes, Barcelona's successes, but is somebody who is incredibly effective at knitting an attack together.
Yeah, I really like Lingard as a player. I think I've definitely warmed to him as well. He strikes me as someone who would be really annoying in the dressing room, but actually really good fun to play with.
Yeah.
He seems to just be very busy and very more about the collective, I think. You don't really tend to see too much stuff that's about him, really. Mm. You know, he really puts, I don't want to use massive cliches, but he really puts shifts in.
He's a bit of a sixth man to use an NBA.
Yeah, definitely. Like, and I think that's like we were saying before, how, you know, Lukaku and Sanchez aren't getting games at the moment or starting games. I know Sanchez is coming back from injury, but also I think that actually Pogba, Lingard and Rashford clicks a little better, I think, and they just seem to gel a little bit more than Pogba, Sanchez and Lukaku at the moment. I think I know Pogba and Lukaku are tight, and I actually think those two can play together quite well, but I think it's finding the personnel around him. And also with Martial in there, I just think that as a four is working really quite well.
They're frighteningly fast, actually, those four. If you think, I mean, Pogba doesn't look fast, but he can shift gears. He's like a hovercraft, actually. You know, like, you don't seem to be traveling at all, and all of a sudden you're like halfway across the harbour. You're like, how did I get here? You watch him and just, he gets through tackles. There was one moment, actually a beautiful tackle by Sissoko, had quite a decent game till he got injured. Mm. Pogba just sort of nibbles the ball through two players.
Yeah.
And then Sissoko just cuts across him. But that passage was like, the short space in which he does things, you know, that kind of creativity, we really have missed that. I don't want to make this too much about United, because I think that we also talk about Spurs and how, you know, they were brilliant. In the way they just repeatedly cut through, not just United, but the heart of United in a way that, you know, teams with even greater firepower than Spurs, I think that's Spurs' one problem. I think the just brutal firepower. You look at someone like PSG will be watching that game, and I think they'll be salivating at some aspects of that. Yeah. I think they'll be watching how United tire and thinking, the last half hour, if this team can't keep running against us, we're going to absolutely have a tea party against them. So I think, you know, room for growth for United, but also I think we need to talk about Spurs and say, Pochettino, really, what he's created there is just a ruthless...
He did make a mistake in my view, and when Sissoko got injured, he brought on Lamella, and I would have put my trust in Oliver Skip at that point, the young central midfielder who's been so dynamic and has shown that he can be trusted in that position. But instead, he reverted to a strategy used against Everton, where he dropped Eriksen back and tried to use him as some kind of deep-lying playmaker, Pirlo-esque kind of thing. And it did work really well against Everton when they won 6-2, but that kind of big change to the team dynamic needs a few more runouts and preferably not against a team like United. So for me, that was an error by Pochettino. But losing Sissoko was huge. And Harry Kane has also picked up an ankle injury as well.
Yeah, that looks quite worrying.
Yeah, right? Spurs have actually got a bit of an injury problem. Kind of, they're starting to stack up a bit now.
And Son's gone to the Asian.
He's off
Cup now.
Yeah, for 2 weeks, I think.
Yeah,
that squad depth though, isn't it? That's always been the Spurs thing, and the Chelsea thing to an extent. Mm-hmm. It's just the intensity of game they play, and just the resources. You know, United have got a guy who they pay $500,000 a week to on the bench.
Yeah.
Sanchez, and aren't sweating a bead about it. Yeah. That's pretty wild. Like, and we have to discuss these inequalities because they are a factor. Mm. If Spurs have the kind of resources where they have a player like Sanchez, if put it this way, if Spurs said, we have so many great players that can leave a guy with $500,000 a week on the bench, I mean, then that's a different game at the weekend.
It's quite frustrating for me sometimes because I look at that Tottenham team and I think the forward line is sorted.
Right.
They've got two or even three good goalkeepers. The central defence is fine. Davinson Sanchez was on the bench yesterday and he's an exceptional talent. But Spurs need a dominating central midfielder and they need two new fullbacks. You know, dream signing, Alexandro.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And then in the midfield, Verratti. Obviously, they're not going to sign those players, but these are the kind of players they need to be looking at to try and step things up. But they're so close, you know, but never quite there.
Yuri Tielemans from Monaco. Get that new stadium. Yeah. Get that new stadium. Not because that guy's
a big shout.
The numbers he's putting up at Monaco in a struggling team are still pretty damn impressive.
That is a big shout. Spurs, only one player really has been linked with Spurs in this January transfer window, and that's Florian Grillitsch, the central midfielder for Hoffenheim, which would be really interesting. And now I watch quite a lot of Bundesliga, but I'm going to be watching him a little more closely.
That's good, actually. The beauty about Spurs' position, though, the position they're in, is the German league is a league which is of a high enough standard that players can come across and make a great transition. You know, even Xhaka struggled, but Xhaka's come good. And I just wonder if Spurs might be missing something, not missing a trick, but I'm sure they're looking aggressively at the German market, but there must be good value there, like players, the kind of Hertha Berlin level.
Yeah.
And you say, look, there's a new stadium. We'll make you the centre of our plans the next 3-4 years.
Yeah, and Pochettino's been really good at plucking those players that you wouldn't necessarily, you know, Heung-min Son is a great example.
Right.
He'd been in Germany for best part of a decade, playing for Hamburg through the youth system, then for Leverkusen. He was a player that caught my eye, but I never thought he would ever reach the levels that he has. And Pochettino can raise players' levels in a way that I don't think many other coaches can.
Right.
There will be a time, though, where he's going to get frustrated that is the limit of what he can do at Spurs. And he's a loyal guy, and I genuinely don't think he's going to leave Spurs before they move into their new stadium. I think he sees that as a crucial part of the plan and the jigsaw that he's a part of. But in the not-too-distant future, unless Spurs dramatically change their structure, they have to accept that they might be about to squander the biggest chance they're ever going to have to win the league.
I think that's really the moment of truth, isn't it? You look at where revenues come from, and I'm sure the Spurs marketing team's done an amazing job in raising the profile. At the same time, I just look at, for example, what the Bundesliga have done in China in terms of building their profile. And I just wonder if, you know, can they grab the revenue from somewhere else? What's their breakthrough going to be? What's their overseas revenue going to be? Because I think you're right, if there's not a change in that, because the Spurs are such a well-run club, the sustainability of the model, the renewable nature of the model, they're always going to turn a good profit.
Yeah. Spurs are definitely growing worldwide, though, I think, especially in the US, I don't have the numbers, it's purely based on just like feel, but you seem to see a lot more coverage of Spurs in the States. For example, I subscribe to The Athletic and they have a Premier League section there, and there's as much Spurs stuff on there as any other Premier League club.
Wow, that's great.
A lot of Spurs supporters clubs, and I actually think that maybe the NFL has something to do with that, as playing games at Wembley and Spurs playing at Wembley this season, and also the NFL will play games in Spurs' new stadium, so, and obviously being pretty good. I find it really hard to kind of make any massive calls on Spurs because they just look so, they've been so solid now for so many years,
right.
Consistent, you know, maybe apart from last season's Man City side, You know, it was that 2 or 3 year period where I thought they were the most complete team in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Mm. They've probably been the most complete team like over the last 4 years.
Yeah, definitely.
But
they've just had missed that extra little gear or extra kind of personnel to make it count. And like I say, from a neutral point of view, the Arsenal fan in me is terrified. But as a neutral, I really do hope Poch stays.
Because, me too.
Because it's quite similar to the situation of Simeone at Atleti, and he could have gone and he was always linked to be going and he really wanted to stay with the stadium change and stuff. Mm. So, I mean, also though, I just wanted to kind of say that I think that we could be sat here today and it could have been 3-1 Spurs.
Exactly.
And it would have, maybe it wouldn't have needed so much introspection, you know? So nothing too big can be drawn from this game.
Well, actually, while we're talking about neutrals, the neutral in me wants me Atleti to win the Champions League. Like, really, because I just think there's something about the completion of a project against all the odds. I mean, Atleti have a third the wage bill of Barcelona.
And they've been there twice.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And in a heartbreaking fashion. I just think that if we go back to Pochettino and what he's built, to me, that's what football is about. Mm. And you look at the times when Spurs were the most complete team. And, you know, Leicester, I mean, this is the sad thing. It's the most Spurs thing ever that Spurs could put together a team like that and a campaign like that. And if they'd won, they would have been one of the most hated teams in football history to beat Leicester to that title, which is so unfair.
Yeah.
But I think in some of the other years, it has come down to money. It has come down to, we don't have 70 million to drop on Angel Di Maria or Bernardo Silva.
Exactly.
Or Van Dijk. We don't have 80 million to like throw at a kind
and that,
of,
you know, that and ultimately that has accelerated Liverpool's project past Spurs, because Pochettino was at Spurs, I think, a year before Klopp arrived at Liverpool, and they're both doing exceptional jobs, but Klopp has the resources. He can dip in and spend 70 million on Naby Keita, for example.
Thank you.
Like we've said, though, it's been mainly due to selling really, really well at Liverpool. And I wonder whether there's a piece at Spurs that could be offloaded.
Oh, well, we know who that piece is, don't we?
What, Harry Kane?
Oh, goodness. Look, because Harry Kane would bring in...
Sorry,
the sale of Harry Kane is a game changer.
Because, I mean, that's 150, 160 million euros right
now. No, like minimum. 250.
You reckon?
I think Harry Kane, I think for the best number nine in world football, which he is, sorry, Lewandowski, the best number nine in world football, if they sell him, they've got to sell him for 250 million.
Yeah,
they
have minimum to, 200.
They have
minimum
to sell him for 250. I say that with the ultimate emphasis, because Daniel Levy's now in the transfer market. He could bring in all the players that Spurs needed. But the sale of Kane, it just, and I'm sure at some part of his mind, Levy's thought about it because he's planning ahead. Yeah. But that would be an absolute game changer. And I actually think that Spurs, with their recruitment team and their coach and their, you know, and Levy being as brilliant as he is, they have the nous to replace Kane. And it is like, it's a pivotal moment for them as a club.
I think they learned a lot from the Bale sale as well
about
how not to handle that amount of money. Because I don't think they used that as well as they could have. Yeah, Lamelo Eriksson are the two who are... I mean, but they've signed 6 players with that money, right?
I think. The Magnificent Seven.
I mean, Spurs fascinate me, the transfer strategy, because I always see them as a club that sells really well, to be honest, and maybe buying is the problem. You could argue, and I don't disrespect Sissoko, he's been great and he's really come back to form and prominence. I just feel the club of Spurs resources at that time, spending £30 million, maybe could have been better used.
Yeah.
But I do think, and I don't want to like upset Spurs fans listening to this, but I think the sale of Kane is going to be absolutely, or could be, a game changer for them. And I hope it is, because they deserve that.
It's an emotional one. It hurts my heart just to think about it.
I know this isn't a visual medium, but Michael's face is really quite tragic.
I'm grimacing, I think. But you know, when Kane has been out, Heung-min Son has filled in as a striker more than capably. So,
okay, so hypothetically...
Oh, I don't want to talk about...
Let's play a game. No. Right, so you get 200 million for Kane.
Right.
And you sign... Sandro.
Justin Kluivert.
Ben Chilwell.
Justin Kluivert.
No, I'm just thinking, where else did you want to? Central midfield. You sign Verratti.
Right back,
there you go. You sign Verratti.
And centre mid.
And you play Son up front with Dele Alli behind.
No, because when you sell Kane, you need to reconfigure the entire attack. It's like when Roy Keane goes, you don't buy a Roy Keane replacement.
Were you going to say Harry Keane then? Is that why?
I was in two minds. Yeah, I thought Keane, right? Yeah. You see, that's how my mind works. Jumping around. If it's not Marvel references, it's that. So I just think when the biggest mistake you can make when you sell a player of that quality is to try and sign an immediate replacement or do not. So reconfigure the attack. So sell Roy Keane, you bring Michael Carrick. So you sell Fury and you buy Calm. And I just think with Kane, you divide up his job. So you go, what were his skill sets and what are the players that you buy that then fit in? So you might buy, okay, like Naby Keita players aren't on the market, but you might get a sort of Bram Diaz type player,
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe if Levy is going to persist with the current transfer policy, which he has every right to do, something has to, at some point, unlock it.
Right.
You know?
Dele Alli would be a good sale, actually.
I was just about to say that, because he doesn't have the same emotional connection to Spurs that Kane has. He's also valuable, given his age.
His numbers are amazing.
Exactly, given his talent. And I think there'd be no shortage of big clubs interested in him.
Who do you think they would pay that money? This is the thing. There'd be a lot of clubs that would want to buy him, but in terms of clubs that would take him, I mean, Dele Alli's numbers are incredible. Goals and assists. I think someone like Real would be pretty amazing in terms of, because they'd pay the money. I don't see the fit, but I think that actually, I think Dele Alli, and here's a, let's have a hot take here. Dele Alli to replace Benzema, because Benzema's finishing is very uncertain. He's very highly fated as a link player, but Dele Alli can play in midfield. He can play as an understudy, deputy, alongside any of those players. He could combine well with Ceballos, Modric, Kroos, no problem there. He could play as your false nine. He could play as an out and out. You could play anybody off him. Dele Alli to replace Benzema, I think. It would freshen up the front line really well.
It's interesting to speak about Spurs selling their best players like as a positive.
Right.
As a means to rebuild for the future.
Sure, yeah. But that's the sign. That's the sign of the brilliance of Pochettino. You look at all the great managers, they sell incredible players and they renew. That's the genius of Klopp. Klopp was selling his best player to his direct competitor every single season and still getting better. Yeah. Atletico Madrid, Simeone has had to sell, because they're in so much debt, he's had to sell the best, arguably the best striker in Europe 3 or 4 years running. Like, you know, he's had to sell Falcao after 1 year, had to sell Forlan, had to sell Diego Costa, had to sell them, and kept finding absolute jewels.
Jackson Martinez.
That was a funny one, because I thought that would work. I thought he'd be the game changer that would win them the Champions League.
Was he there for 4 months?
It was almost nothing. And now he went off to China, didn't he? Yeah. Unbelievable. And so I just think that, you know, Spurs selling is a sign of just how good they've become. And like I say, Dele Alli, that could be the one.
I think Liverpool are a prime example now, though, of how selling some of your best players isn't necessarily a negative. It doesn't make you a selling club anymore. Right. I think if the offer's there and
continue,
it's worth
right,
it, like no, if you're going to really look at it from an old-fashioned point of view, if you like, no player in world football is really worth 200 million. No one. They're not really, though. I mean, they might be in terms of like the going market value, but in terms of what you can get instead of, there's no one really that is irreplaceable.
Apart
for
from
money.
That guy. We're not going to talk about that guy, because that guy, you know.
Lionel Messi is the only guy in football.
He's the only one.
He's the only one.
Literally the exception that proves all. You're completely right. And you're absolutely right about that. You're
because the thing
right.
is, he's like, he can do so much more than everyone else. Like, he's a better passer than 90% of the midfielders that you would be able to get to replace him. He's a better finisher than 100% of the strikers, well, okay, 99% of the strikers who you can get to replace him. He's probably a better defender, low key, than
do you know what?
Some people.
I bet Leo Messi's really good at stuff that we like. I bet he's like really good at like home repair and stuff. He's really good. You like when Harrison Ford, before he became like a breakthrough actor, he was like an amazing handyman. Like, I bet Leo Messi's got these kind of like hidden skills.
I bet
skills.
He's really good at flipping beer mats and catching them. Yeah. Exactly. Like, but he can do like a massive pile of them, which is weird because he's quite a small guy.
I just reckon he's just one of those dudes that's like got these random incredible talents.
In fact, I'm going to throw that out there. Tweet us what random things you think Lionel Messi is good at, please. At Rabonamag. Keep them clean, please.
I bet there's a whole community of people he hangs out with who don't know what he does for a living. Mm. And like, he's really well known in that community for like beer mat flipping. Where does he go every Sunday evening at like 9 p.m? He's always off somewhere. What does he do? He's got a DJ slot down, and you know.
Yeah.
Down in Marbella,
He's doing a warm-up set at the Comedy Cellar.
This is a bit random, but I actually used to work with a guy. Shout out if you're listening, Matthew Hardwick. I used to work with a guy who was like a world-class DJ. I used to train at this law firm. And Matthew never came for drinks after work. We're like, where's Matt going off to? And he never came for a drink. Oh, he's just a bit antisocial. He's a bit private. Or he's got like a partner at home. And Matthew, it turned out, was like a world-class trance DJ.
Wow.
And would like, and he goes, oh, that day I couldn't come out for a drink. I was in Sharm El Sheikh. I left work in Surrey and I went to the airport and I flew to Sharm El Sheikh, played it and came back. He was like one of the top 5 trance DJs in the world and had like Judge Jules as his mate as a trainee lawyer.
Hey, wow. Judge Jules now is a lawyer. There you go.
Well, he trained as one. He did it at UCL, I think.
Yeah, he's now, I think he's now a lawyer.
Anyway, there we go.
Is that a good time for a break? Should we break now?
That was good content, I think. I hope you put that in there.
Great content, guys. See you after the break.
And we're back and we're going straight to La Liga to talk about the one, the only La Liga of extraordinary gentlemen, Leo Messi.
Everyone's favourite beer mat flipper, Lionel Messi. He broke another record this week.
Another one.
He was the second player to score 400 league goals in one of Europe's top five leagues.
Easy. And the first ever to do it in the Spanish league, right?
First ever to do it in one league, I do believe.
Unbelievable.
One major league.
In how many games? Like
435 matches, which, so he's the second player to do it after Cristiano Ronaldo. And I think he did it in 63 fewer matches.
You know what's scary? Because he shoots so much less than Ronaldo. And also, Messi didn't really get going in terms of goals, in terms of like volume goal scoring, until about two or three seasons in. You know those years that he was kind of playing as the wide forward or the winger?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was under Guardiola. I think Guardiola said, under me, he's going to score like three goals a game.
Yeah, Guardiola set him free.
Yeah, right.
He's just brutally efficient, isn't he?
The thing was, in the game against Eibar over the weekend, which is what he got it, Barca won 3-0. Suarez got two. He was kind of quiet, actually. And then he just popped up, broke a record. Could have had another one a few minutes later, actually, as well.
I mean, quiet in the same way that, you know, a lion eyes up a gazelle. For 20 minutes it's walking around, and then for like 30 seconds it's all over you.
Yeah. I mean, like, Lionel Messi's quiet is Nicholas Bentner's worldie.
There's a great, there's a Twitter account.
Is he still
called,
in prison, by the way, Nicholas Bentner?
I'm not sure. There's a Twitter account called Barca Numbers, if you find it, Barca Numbers. Mm. And it's got an article saying, I think the average Leo Messi is better than 98%. Of Europe's forwards
ever.
Like, just, I think he does it. It's really fascinating account, he or she, whoever runs the account, or if it's a group of them. And it's basically aggregated Leo Messi's finishing over the last 15 years.
Wow.
And it's done a compilation of the top 200. I think Ronaldo is about sort of 100 and something, but Messi is sort of out by himself.
What is that, at Barca Numbers?
It's over at Barca, yeah, at Barca Numbers is the Twitter account.
Some reading material for you all.
There we go. Just geeking out. You know,
Yeah, elsewhere. I mean, actually, maybe I'll save it and direct people to a new feature on Rabona, on the Rabona site. First La Liga roundup.
Yeah.
It will be up by the time this podcast is up. Go through Real Madrid beating Betis, all kinds of other fun stuff. Some good stuff happened at Bilbao.
Quick shout as well, because we're talking about La Liga. A thank you to La Liga for giving us a shout out. I did La Liga TV.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of weeks ago. Lee Roden, thank you for bringing me in. And it was lovely to talk to them. And they were really kind. They mentioned our podcast. They also mentioned Dabry at the intro. So
awesome.
Yeah, thanks, La Liga TV. Thought we'd return the favour and the shout out. Lovely show, great presenters. And
lovely. But go to rabonamag.com, read my roundup.
Absolutely. Very good at this too. Very good at this too.
Plug.
Any other news?
Where are we going next? We're going back to the Premier League. We're going to talk about Arsenal.
Let's not talk about Arsenal.
Let's talk about West Ham.
Let's talk about Declan Rice. Before we do, let's talk about the guy who set up the goal, Samir Nasri.
Interesting. Do you two want to handle this?
He's had an interesting career, hasn't he?
First assist in the Premier League in a few years, I do believe.
Was it his first game in some time, given his ban?
Well, he went to Sevilla.
Yeah.
And then he got banned. I can't remember when his last game was in the Premier League. Yeah, West Ham fully deserved the win.
Mm-hmm.
We can keep this pretty short because there's not much to say apart from West Ham were not amazing, but did enough.
It was a clinical finish by Rice, who I think is developing into one of the most exciting young English-Irish talents. I think he's played three friendly games for Ireland and yet to be capped for England. If he does choose that to go that way, he's a very intelligent player, kind of like, in fact, I was talking to a West Ham fan, a friend of mine, and he said he's like Michael Carrick, but not quite as good passing, but much better defending.
Oh, that's quite nice.
I mean, he's the real deal, and he's been the real deal for a little while, quietly, kind of coming under the radar.
Exactly.
Played some games at centre back.
Yeah.
And then played in midfield. And I think we mentioned him early on in the in the season, I think, one game after. Because West Ham had a terrible start, and I think their first win came when, I think, Pellegrini pushed him into midfield, and he had a really good game.
Yeah.
Is that against Everton, maybe, I think? Yeah, I mean, his first senior goal for West Ham, I do believe.
Yeah, that's true.
There's no panic around West Ham anymore, is there? And he's part of that.
There's no panic around Declan Rice whenever he gets the ball, and that's what really impresses me about him. For someone so young, he's just got this. You know, great players, they look like they're playing the game in slow motion,
right?
Yeah.
You know, and he kind of has a bit of that about him. So, yeah.
One thing I'll say about that quality, and I wanted to sort of hone in on that for a moment. That thing about great players having time in the ball, which I think you're referring to, is it's how they receive possession, isn't it? So it's the difference between players who receive possession and then make a decision, as opposed to those who the first touch takes them away from the ball. away from the opponent. And there's a great compilation on YouTube. It's quite sad, I mean, to have dug it out, but it's a compilation of Toni Kroos's first touch. And Toni Kroos, arguably in football, has the best first touch in terms of getting the ball out of his feet. Yeah. So the amount of times that Kroos gets fouled,
yeah,
and it doesn't get dispossessed cleanly because he has this incredible first touch where he kind of hits it with a bit of spin.
Yeah.
It just fizzes out of his feet. And all mm-hmm. of a sudden he's like 3 feet away from someone.
Yeah. You made that video, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yes. From your and yes, and you YouTube added the music. Burner. You added the music, didn't you, Ryan?
Oh, was that? Yeah.
Yeah, that was you.
You still
yeah.
pay, you haven't paid me for that yet.
Can we take a break?
But yeah, so Arsenal are now level on points with Manchester United, who have sacked their manager and had a nightmare of a season. So yay. From an Arsenal point of view, just quickly, because we talk about Arsenal too much. The Ozil issue is something that is quite concerning because apparently he was fully fit and available and not in the squad on the weekend. Right. And Arsenal are desperately lacking some creativity at the moment. Right. Their shots per game average this season is way down. Lowest it's been for, I think, maybe the last 20 years.
So what's going on there? Is it some kind of personal issue between the two? Because it's an open secret kind of thing that they don't seem to see eye to eye or what?
If I'm being honest, I don't really know. So I'm not going to make a massive kind of judgment call it because I think that it's really easy for people, I think, just to kind of make a call on what they think's going on. But there's so much stuff that we don't see.
Yeah, right.
So I think that you've got to kind of think, there's a manager here who is leaving, arguably, if everyone's playing 100%, Mesut Ozil is the best Arsenal player that squad.
Yeah.
So something's going on. He has been injured, but he's been back in training the full week now. And other players who came back, Hector Bellerin, he was on the bench, came on. So I don't know. I mean, I honestly think, though, if Arsenal are going to get anything out of the season, and really their domestic season could be over by this time next week, lose to Chelsea next weekend, I think top four's done.
Right.
Which means that the only way to get back into the Champions League is going to be through the Europa League, and they're going to need players like Mesut Ozil because that's not an easy competition to win.
Ozil's one of these players that divides opinion so starkly, you know, and we're all fans of him, but maybe it's just a case that Emery, he wants players that are going to run harder.
Yeah, I think he's got a very specific idea. Did we mention this last week maybe about what he wants a midfielder to do?
Yeah.
And I think that's why you've seen Aaron Ramsey not getting many games. I mean, you know, we actually, on that topic, we called it before it was official last week, and we called the Matuidi, Pjanic, Ramsey midfield at Juve.
That's right.
And the first article that came out about him signing said, he's expected to start straight away with Pjanic and Matuidi in Juventus' midfield. So
I'm excited to see
I feel so good about shouts.
You're
like
welcome.
That. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Elsewhere.
Ramsey, I haven't heard that name in years.
Oh, I remember him.
I remember him.
Elsewhere in the Premier League, Liverpool won.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good win for them. 1-0. Good win for them because Brighton, you know, tough proposition, especially at home.
Yeah, they're grinding out wins when they need to.
Just a great team of Paul.
Their defensive record is crazy.
They're on a different level.
Chelsea beat... Who did Chelsea
Newcastle
beat?
Newcastle, yeah.
Pedro and Willian.
Yeah, good weekend for Chelsea.
Yep.
After the Spurs result and the Arsenal result.
And the Ralph Hasenhüttl project continues to bounce.
We're going to start having Hasenhüttl Ecke, which is a corner.
What's Sancho doing right now? Do you think he's listening to our podcast?
Speaking of Sancho, seeing as we have to mention him every week, the Bundesliga returns this weekend from its winter pause, and Borussia Dortmund have a very, very difficult game at Leipzig. Leipzig haven't lost at home in the league all season. Dortmund won their final game of the year, but had a bit of a wobble against Dusseldorf, one of the teams fighting relegation. So, yeah, that's definitely the big game in the Bundesliga to look out for. Also, Bayern are playing Hoffenheim. So that's also an interesting one.
Are you going?
I'm going to Leipzig. Yeah, it's an hour down the road from Berlin. So
only an hour? Quite close.
I'll have my eye on that.
Man on the road.
I just love how so many of the great football towns are so close together.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
And we're in Berlin.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of them. Should we take another quick break and then come back?
For sure.
Back from the break with some breaking news.
Yeah. What's happening?
Nottingham Forest legend Martin O'Neill is now the new Nottingham Forest manager.
Neil. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Very interesting.
Interesting. Very interesting. Oh!
Yeah, I always assumed he'd already managed Nottingham Forest for some reason, but no, he hadn't. First time.
That's such a great shout because they've had like 9 managers in 9 years or something crazy.
It's a good shout.
I like that appointment quite a lot.
The thing is, I mean, about reviving a club like Forest and call me romantic, but you look at Leeds and of which later Marcel Bielsa, there's something to be said for getting in a manager who's brilliant, who's got this like progressive style of play and really just going for it. Like, because that's what Forest are. To me, they're a club that they stand for beautiful, flowing, attacking football. Mm. And I just, you know, I hope that O'Neill stabilizes them and pushes them forward. Yeah. But I just don't know if he's got the chops to, the creative chops. You know, to me, I don't want to be negative because it's such a, it's a romantic appointment in a sense.
Might be one for the intangibles. Yeah. You know, like the Solskjaer thing.
Good. Right. O'Neill's also coming off the back of a couple of failed jobs.
I mean, he left the Ireland job and he was not very popular.
And the last time he really was, you know, influential with his tactics and strategy in the game was a decade ago with Aston Villa.
Villa, yeah. That year they were top at Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh. It's like, I don't want to be negative. It's just, you want to bring in a geeky outsider. You know, there's sometimes when things have been done the same way for so long, you just need someone to come in and freshen up. Because, you know, someone like Karanka is a good manager, but a limited manager. And, you know, really lacks, I suppose, consistently the imagination to bring the best from teams. Mm. And, you know, Bielsa will come onto the criticism of him, very shortly. But there is a manager who is getting, and this is the weird thing, there was a time when Vinnie Jones was at Leeds. Do you remember that? Vinnie Jones went to Leeds and was playing 40-yard passes in a way that he'd never been allowed to do before. And I just, there's something to be said for a manager coming in and saying, look, do you know what? Give it a bit of a go. We're going to lose a couple of games, but we're going to get everyone loose and bring the best out of you.
Yeah.
And I just hope O'Neill can do that for them.
I mean, they've rattled off so many different kinds of managers over the last few years that I think maybe turn into the former hero.
Yeah,
is a good shout.
Good luck.
But,
But on Leeds, I need to work for
United.
That's true. Well, it's working. But away from United and towards Leeds, we have this sort of Spygate. So Bielsa's been spying on...
No, he hasn't.
The scout has, right? So his proxies, yeah. his ravens. Bielsa's ravens have been spying on the opposition.
Yeah.
And Frank Lampard was very upset by this. I think, you know, Leeds beat Derby recently. And he said, you know, it's a cultural thing. You know, we don't really like it. And Bielsa said, well, look, you could do this in Italy, it wouldn't be a problem. I mean, I'm not entirely sure that's the case. I'm not sure anyone would be that happy with Snoop.
Lampard said that he has his book in his living room, but this has clouded it for him a little bit.
Is it going on the fire now when he goes home?
The idea that Frank Lampard playing his peak years at Chelsea is disillusioned by skullduggery in football is a bit of a reach.
Yes.
But anyway.
I don't know what other books Frank Lampard's into.
He's a super smart guy. He probably reads a lot of things.
Well, I've never really thought about it. I'm not kind of saying that as a judgment thing. Yeah, I'm just kind of never thought about Frank Lampard reading. Mind you, I never really think about
it. He's written children's books. Lampard's written children's books, hasn't he?
Was it Frank Lampard? I know Theo Walcott has.
Yeah. Lampard has, yeah. It's his whole thing. It's like his
big
Steve
Bruce wrote crime thrillers.
That's right, actually, yeah. Goodness me.
Well, I think we got a bit off a tangent. I might chop this.
Sorry. Well, no, I quite like this. No, leave it in. Leave the content in. The wandering nature of Hun's mind.
Yeah. If you leave me on my own a little bit, I'll drift.
Your own devices,
But Bielsa didn't actually... I saw a thing that he didn't make the call. It was very much... Or is that... Do you think that's some spin on it? It was like... Mm. It was a lone wolf.
Yeah.
A lone wolf. Mm. Plausible deniability. It all sounds very sort of...
It's unethical, but what are you really going to learn from, you know, spying over some bushes, like seeing some... I don't know. Has it worked for him before?
I think, to be fair to Lampard, it is a bit shady because if you look at...
It's a hell of a compliment, though.
But if you think about, well, he could just be an obsessive. I mean, Guardiola used to do like 4 days on putting together tactics against Cologne.
By the way, Guardiola's response to the Bielsa thing was, "I need Leeds in the Premier League." He said, "I love Leeds.
I love that.
Yeah.
It is a bit shady. I mean, I won't sort of dwell on it too long, but I think it is a bit shady.
It's a bit shady, but nothing more.
Before we go, wanted to mention Women's Super League.
Yeah.
Arsenal, bad weekend for Arsenal. Arsenal lost 2-1 to Chelsea, missing a couple of key players, no Daniela van der Donk, and it's all very tight at the top of the Women's Super League. Man City are now top.
Right.
Chelsea, last season's champions, who had a terrible start. The reverse fixture of this, Arsenal won 5-0 early on in the season. They are third. Arsenal are second with a game in hand. If they win the game in hand, they go 2 points above City. So it's all very tight at the top of the Women's Super League. Arsenal have 10 games left. Man City and Chelsea have 9. So
that's nice.
Man City on 31 points, Arsenal 30, Chelsea 28, and then Birmingham City 25. In the Championship, there was a bit of a concerning development in the Manchester United Charlton game. Charlotte Kerr, Charlton player, got severely injured in the goal. I think this was only about 25 minutes in.
Right.
And there was a massive stop in play. And they had to, I think, the medical teams from both sides were giving her treatment, and they had to wait for 25 minutes for an ambulance, I think.
It's wild.
But yeah, the match ended up being abandoned.
See, that's wild. I mean, the nature, the whole infrastructure there can't be effective if that's a thing that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've not seen any updates from the injury, but yeah, hope. And hoping also for nothing too serious and a speedy recovery for Charlotte Kerr.
Yeah, best of luck with that. Yeah,
On that tip, actually, I'd recommend watching both of the Women's Super League and the Women's Championships. Quite easy to see as well. They stream a lot of stuff on Facebook
free.
And there's a Women's Champions League is returning soon.
Yeah, Wolfsburg. I'll try to get that, actually. I'll try to sort of wangle tickets.
My dad told me he's going to go and see PSG. I think they're playing Chelsea.
Wolfsburg.
They play Kingstonian ground.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else to report? We're going to have some more stuff going up on the website this week. Make sure you check that. My La Liga roundup.
Yep.
I thoroughly recommend.
Otherwise, it's looking all quite exciting, all to play for in all leagues. Mm-hmm. So yeah, watch this space, audience. Thank you so much. In the meantime, though, for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us. Please check us out on social media, all normal handles, at Rabona Mag. That's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you like watching.
Another shout quickly before we go. If you do listen on iTunes, please give us a rating, preferably 5 stars. If you're not up for giving us a 5-star one, maybe don't worry about it.
Yep.
And a lovely review. It will help always us welcome. Grow the podcast. Yeah. And yeah, thanks again.
Thank you so much, everyone. And yeah, take care. Catch you next week.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.